It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Legendary Southern University baseball coach Roger Cador.
That 1985 class that I recruited, I told those young men that they were going to be a part of history. What kind of history, I didn't know, but I told them they would be a part of history. And in 1987, they go out and beat Cal State Fullerton, which was the history I was talking about.
LSU national champion and Super Bowl champion Marlon Favorite.
It made me feel comfortable to go to work every day at LSU, knowing that he embraced my passion and my love for music as well. We had fun. We were freestyling locker room. Coach Miles would come and dance.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, and you are listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. I want to thank you for making us part of your morning commute. We got a tremendous Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company to get to. We'll be talking a lot about the Saints as they gear up for their season opener against the Houston Texans on Monday. We'll also be talking about LSU football. We'll also have some high school football season previews. That's coming right around the corner. Thursday and Friday night, high school football kicks off officially here in Acadiana and the rest of the state of Louisiana. But we're also going to be talking a lot of raging Cajun football. And that's where we're going to start off with today's show. Cajuns fell just short. 38-28 on Saturday inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome in defeating Mississippi State. It would have been the program's first win over a team from the Southeastern Conference. The win over Texas A&M, as we know, was the historic win in 1996, was, of course, while Texas A&M was still a member of the Big 12 Conference. They did a lot of things right. They did a lot of things wrong. It's what you typically see in a season opener. You liked the, what you have to be impressed by is the fact that the Cajuns didn't give up, that they showed a lot of grit, that they fought back, that they put the early miscues behind them, including the rash of turnovers, and fought back against a team from the SEC West. Now, do we know how good Mississippi State is going to be this year? No. What I saw on Saturday would lead me to believe that you're looking probably at a 7-win team. Not that far off from what they were a year ago when they won 8 games. So you're looking at a middle-of-the-pack SEC team, but still, it's a team from the SEC. And there's a lot to be happy with. There's a lot to take away from that, but there's also a lot to work on. Execution. The Cajuns committed 5 turnovers in Saturday's opener. If they only have 3 turnovers instead of 5, do they win that game? Maybe. Do they execute their offense a little bit better? Some better play calling? Could they have won that game? Maybe. Billy Napier had his weekly presser yesterday, and despite the technical issues that the team experienced, he said he was proud of what he saw out of his players there inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome on Saturday.
Very proud of our players and our staff. I thought we put the players in position outside of a handful of calls. Thought we had a really good plan in all 3 phases. And I was very pleased with the effort the players played with. Certainly very physical, very tough, and the competitive spirit was what you would want. You know, we've made tons of progress in terms of the intangibles that our team has. We've built great trust. There's tremendous relationships in that locker room. This is a group that enjoys being around each other, and they play that way.
So he was proud of the effort. He was proud of the fact that the brotherhood that he saw on display in Saturday's game. What Billy Napier was not pleased with was the fact that he didn't see enough plays where it was basically 11-on-11. There was too many times where someone had missed their assignment, where someone did not execute what they were supposed to do and automatically gave Mississippi State an advantage numbers-wise, is how Billy Napier described it yesterday.
We need more football plays where we go 11 for 11. You know, there's a lot of plays where we have a little bit of a glitch or an issue, and we're 10 for 11. You know, we got one guy that's a holdup there. So challenge the team to take complete ownership of their role. You know, that's where we're at. You know, I think without struggle, there is no growth. And we need to use the emotional things that came with this, knowing that we were in the fight. We did have a chance to win the game. The damage that did to you and how you laid in bed that night and thought about all the things that maybe you could have done better.
So there's some regret there. You can tell it was a little bit more apparent after the game on Saturday, a little bit more frustration where you feel like Billy Napier and his staff felt like if they would have just executed better, that they may have been 3 to 4 plays away from winning that game. Now, is that true? I don't know. Like I said, the 5 turnovers is really 4 because the last one was a desperation right at the end as time was expiring, or about to expire, rather. So really only 4 turnovers. But there were plays. There was a 4th-and-1 play early in the game that just kind of, you just scratched your head. It was like a short little pass that Levi was trying to throw to the wide receiver, and the wide receiver is going to apparently throw it back to Levi. And instead of just running the ball with their 3-headed monster running game, they got a little too cute, and it cost them. And it was a turnover on downs. Left points on the board. You could have had points on the board. You left them off the board, rather. And that could have played a huge role in the outcome of that game. Napier said that they still need to play well in every single phase of the game, offense, defense, and special teams.
We just need to do our job in all 3 phases. You know, we got to punt the ball with some hang time, right? We got to leverage the ball with the correct shoulder. And you know, those are things that you don't get them back. You know, I think that there's a little bit of a reality check with our players. This is the reason that sometimes they think we're a little harsh, you know. But, you know, there's a lot of positive, man, on that tape. I'll say that.
So you hear it there. There's still a lot of positives on the tape for Billy Napier and his staff. One of the positives has to be the performance of the tight ends. Now, look, you remember Chase Rogers injured his foot, broke his foot once again. Then he made the decision to transfer out and go become a walk-on at Ole Miss. Their backup tight end that they had brought in, he himself got injured during fall camp. And they essentially began the season with H-backs lining up at tight end. But sure enough, one of those H-backs caught the first touchdown of the game for the Raging Cajuns on Saturday. This is what Billy Napier had to say about his tight end group.
I was very pleased with that group, you know, and I'm excited really about those guys, not only all 4 in their first game for the Cajuns, right? They played well. They competed. They played hard. They were assignment sound. No major issues in the game. And I'm excited because now we know we got a bunch of competitive dudes that it's not too big for. And, you know, seeing those guys grow as the season goes, I think we're going to be in really good shape there.
So a big takeaway is they felt positive about what they had at tight end. And that's going to be a position that's going to be kind of evolving as the season progresses, because you're not going to be able to do a whole season throwing out a traditional kind of H-back, a fullback there at the tight end spot. You're just not going to be able to. So they're going to have to develop, and they're going to have to kind of game plan a little bit as the season progresses. But a good start that they were able to use the tight end and actually use the tight end to score a touchdown. They also banged up their offensive line a little bit in Saturday's game. Look, they entered it with having a new starter, Shane Vallow, the former Como High star, who was a preferred walk-on that became a scholarship player. He started at center. Cole Prudham, the former Eunice High star, had suffered an ACL injury. He's still recovering from that. But the rest of the line was veteran. But they did have to shake some things up during the game. And guys like Mitchell and Torrence got some playing time. And this is what Coach Napier had to say about their performance.
We ended up using some of our contingency plans in the game. You know, we always talk about, okay, this guy gets hurt, what do we do? This guy gets hurt, what do we do? We talked about it that morning at 6:30 in the staff meeting. So Max slid right in there and played left, you know, and did a really nice job. He had worked there throughout training camp. You know, that was one of the things that we had worked. Part of that was that Ken got hurt earlier in training camp, so we had to, you know, kind of work our way through that. That we then later slid Osiris Torrence over there to left, where he had worked extensively during training camp. So, and he did a nice job and played 34 plays in the game. So both of those young men will probably play that position. But certainly Osiris will make that permanent move over until we find out exactly where Ken's at.
So it's another positive. A couple of your starters, your returning veteran guys across the line, they get nicked up. And you have to go to your backups, which you didn't want to do, but you had to do. They performed well. That tells you the depth of this offensive line is a huge asset for the Raging Cajuns moving forward. So if another guy falls down or gets nicked up, they don't have to worry about missing a beat because they didn't against a team from the SEC West. That's a great takeaway, especially if you're offensive coordinator and O-line coach Rob Sale, to know that you have so much depth that you can still go toe-to-toe with Mississippi State. And there were times where they were able to push the pile. Now, you couldn't say that in years past. Hell, you couldn't have said that last year. So, definitely a good takeaway from that. Coach Napier also talked about, obviously, offensive line stepped up. He talked about the tight end stepping up. His quarterback, Levi Lewis. Now, Levi ended up having a fairly good game. He was able to overcome two turnovers on the first two Raging Cajun possessions. The first offensive play from scrimmage was an interception thrown by Levi, a bad one at that. Like, you watch it and you're like, oh no. And then he was sacked and stripped of a ball on the next possession that ended that drive. He was able to overcome, set career highs for passing yardage and completions. But he also ran some, and Coach Billy Napier said yesterday they would much rather prefer having Levi Lewis throw the ball more than he runs it.
We like to play, and the quarterback doesn't get hit the entire day. You know, maybe that's because I play quarterback. You know, but I think the quarterback in our system, he has to make so many decisions to distribute the ball. You know, there's so much going on out there where the guy's got to make decisions based off the defense. I like to not run the guy, but certainly the couple scenarios where he did run it, it was the right decision on his part. So there's going to be some of that, but, you know, no different than Andre last year. We're going to try to play a particular brand of ball. I'd much rather hand it to the running backs we have than have Levi run the ball.
Much rather have the running backs run the ball than have Levi run the ball. So that tells you, it kind of gives you a little bit of a glimpse of what they really want Levi to do. Levi's a dual threat quarterback. They want him to throw the ball more. They want him to continue to develop as a passer because they have the luxury of having three guys that could start for any other team in the Sun Belt Conference lining up as part of the platoon in their backfield. Now, I wondered aloud, watching Saturday's game, why'd they go away from Raymond Calais, who had 10 carries for like 80 yards. I'm sorry, or 8 carries for 80 yards. So he was averaging 10 a pop, and all of a sudden you didn't see him again. So they may need to tweak how they do that rotation there because him and Trey Regas were unstoppable, and they went away from him. So they do have the horses, so to speak, there in the backfield. They want to use them more. They want Levi to develop more as a passer. So that's kind of Napier's way of saying, hey, we know you have legs. We know you have wheels. We know you can do something with those. We want you to stay in the pocket and go through your progressions and make the reads. We have a veteran offensive line here. We even have backups that can come in and pass protect you. We have guys that can run the ball and run it best, some of the best running backs, not only in the conference, but in the country. We just need you to develop as a passer. That's his way of kind of telling his quarterback, hey, let's not have five turnovers. Let's not throw an interception on the very first play of the game. He's saying it in a nice way, but he's saying it. We'll have to take a quick timeout right here, but we'll continue the Raging Cajun football discussion after this quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's good to see our league continue to play at a high level, you know, and make some noise nationally. I think it speaks to the quality of coaches that we've got in the league, and it speaks to how they've been recruiting, how they've evaluated, and certainly the process that they've got in place at their place.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. That's head coach of the Raging Cajuns, Billy Napier, asked yesterday about the success of the Sun Belt Conference in the opening week of the season. Now, your Raging Cajuns fought hard but came up short against Mississippi State, but they weren't the only team to do well. We know what happened in Knoxville, Tennessee. Tennessee, the Volunteers, paid $950,000, wrote a check for $950,000 to old poor Georgia State out of the Sun Belt. Georgia State was the worst team in the Sun Belt Conference last year. They won two games. Awful. It's a money game for them. They go over, they travel to an SEC school like Tennessee, they take their whooping, they take their check, and they buy some equipment with it and maybe get some nice like fathead decals on their locker room walls or something, whatever you spend that $950,000 for. Well, I'm pretty sure they spent that money on something else because they beat Tennessee in Tennessee. A two-win Sun Belt team from a year ago goes into Knoxville and upsets the Volunteers, rallies to do it to upset the Volunteers at home. By the way, Tennessee is an absolute dumpster fire of a program and has been ever since they fired Philip Fulmer. Bad coaching hire after bad coaching hire after bad coaching hire. And this one sure does look like another one. Woof. Sun Belt, though, is a good league. ULM also won their opener against Grambling State over the weekend. So it was a good showing for the Sun Belt Conference, top to bottom. Cajuns didn't get the win, but at least they did show out and showed that they can go toe-to-toe with the team from the SEC West. This week, the Raging Cajuns return home. Home opener this Saturday, Cajun Field, kickoff 6:30. The Liberty Flames come to town. They lost their season opener to Syracuse. They're from a lower division. They're from Virginia. And Liberty is known right now for their head coach. And their head coach is Hugh Freeze. You remember Hugh. He was the former Ole Miss grad assistant coach under Ed Orgeron when Coach O was back at Ole Miss. Stuck around through other coaching staffs, eventually becoming head coach, leaving a high-powered offense. He beat Nick Saban twice. Ole Miss defeated Alabama twice. And Hugh Freeze did it with high-powered offenses. He led Ole Miss to a win in the Sugar Bowl for the first time in 50 years. 10-win season. And then everything came off the rails. Disgrace. Scandal. They had academic issues. They just now got off of probation. Matt Luke, the head coach there at Ole Miss, was an assistant under Hugh Freeze. He's been the interim coach, promoted to head coach, but let's be honest, he's not going to last. By the way, Ole Miss lost to Memphis to start the year. Left that program in disarray, not only with the academic issues, but also the personal scandal involving an escort service in Memphis involving the head coach, Hugh Freeze. Now, Hugh landed on his feet. He's now the head coach at Liberty. The Flames, they come to town. Hugh Freeze, though, had to coach game one of this season from a hospital bed. They showed it on television. This is what Coach Billy Napier had to say of what he and the Cajuns are going to do to help accommodate Hugh Freeze.
Well, I think our administration's handling all that, but certainly we want to do everything we can do to help Coach Freeze. I mean, it's a unique scenario for him. I think if any of us were in that situation and had an obligation to a group of people, we would want to do everything we could do for him. I know I would, and certainly respect him navigating this as he overcomes, which, you know, is a tough deal. So our thoughts and prayers are with Coach Freeze.
What about the actual Flames themselves? This is what Coach Billy Napier had to say about what they're gearing up to see come Saturday at Cajun Field.
You know, Liberty's got a handful of players that are explosive, you know, really good skill on offense. The quarterback's a proven passer who's spread it around last year, threw for all kinds of yards. And then they've got some disruptive defensive players. You know, they've got some edge players that are unique that can create some issues for you. They're big and inside backer and physical, really big in the interior D-line. Impressed with the overall athletic ability of the back-end guys, and certainly some new players as well that they've added to the roster. So, you know, Coach Freeze is a proven head coach. He certainly has always had very competitive teams, well-coached teams, and this one's going to be no different.
Cajuns host Liberty 6:30 on Saturday. We'll talk more about Liberty later in today's show. Right now, we got to switch over to the Saints. We'll do it after this quick timeout. This is 103.7 The Game. Welcome back. Good morning to you. And we appreciate you making us part of your day. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Spent the first part of today's show talking all things Raging Cajuns. Billy Napier had his presser yesterday. They're gearing up for week two of the college football season as they welcome in the Liberty Flames, coached by, of course, Hugh Freeze. Now, but that's not the only football going on, right? College has now officially kicked off. We're all in. Everyone's got at least one game under their belt, including those teams that played in that weird week zero situation. So we're all geared up. High school football starts this week as well. Thursday night, a few games are kicked off here. Then the rest, everyone will kick off on Friday. But NFL starts this week too, ladies and gentlemen. Preseason is in the books. 53-man roster cuts are done. And here we go. Saints are going to open up the season Monday. Game one of the two-game doubleheader on Monday Night Football. The Saints are hosting the Houston Texans. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game, by the way. Saints met with the media yesterday to gear up for game week. Alvin Kamara, a lot is expected of him, the versatile running back, and a guy who was second on the team last year in pass-catching abilities with receptions. This is what the two-time Pro Bowl running back and a guy who's now going to shoulder a little bit more of the load with Mark Ingram leaving in free agency to become a member of the Baltimore Ravens. This is what he had to say about that vaunted Texans defense that the Saints are going to be facing off on Monday night.
Yeah, we have. I mean, it's an active defense. Great up front. They're missing Jadeveon now, but still, I mean, they got players I can fill in. They're good. They rally to the ball. They take the ball away. So it's a lot of things that we're seeing on film that, you know, is posing the challenge. But, you know, I think we're confident in the way we prepare in our game plan.
They're confident in their game plan. And this is what Alvin had to say about his thoughts on the team's 53-man roster.
It's not our decision to make, but I feel like I think every year I've been here at least has been, you know, I think there's been a lot of thought that goes into that, and I think it's the best that, you know, the best that it gives us the best opportunity to win the 53 we pick.
And see, Alvin's kind of put in a tough spot there, right? Because we know how close he was to Mark Ingram, and the Saints and Mark Ingram couldn't come to terms. So you're asking a player his thoughts on the actual 53-man roster, knowing that he was very close to a guy that you decided to let go and let walk. As you said, that was kind of not our decision. But we got the best 53-man roster that we can put out there. Kamara also said that, you know, asked about, does this team have a slogan? Is there some type of mantra that this team is going to be all about this season? He dismissed that. He basically said there's no need for any of that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a need for that. You know, I think we know what the standard is. We set the standard the past 2 years. Like you said, we know what's happened the last 2 years. Some of it out of our control, but, you know, I mean, we keep playing this game. We got another year, another opportunity to do what we do.
Another opportunity to do what we do. I like that. I like that mindset a lot, to be honest with you. They could be dwelling on it and saying, hey, you know, come up with some kind of cute slogan about how they were robbed and now they're going to be the ones robbing people and everything like that. No, it's all business. They understand that they only have a very small window to still have number nine throw them the ball. So these guys are all in. The Saints are all in. Everything that they've done, Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland, and Sean Payton have done as the brain trust of the organization has been for that reason. And one of those was deciding on Sunday, a day after establishing the 53-man roster, doing all the roster cuts, setting your practice squad, your 10-man practice squad, the Saints go out there and make a trade, and they trade for Kiko Alonso, a former defensive rookie of the year for the Buffalo Bills, who overcame some knee injuries, and then had three healthy seasons with the Miami Dolphins. He came over in a trade, essentially a swap. The Dolphins gave up Kiko Alonso, a starter for a backup linebacker. That's all the Saints had to give up. Now, this is what Kiko had to say about arriving in New Orleans and being part of what the Saints do. He's excited.
I'm excited, and you know, when I heard about the news of the trade coming here, you know, it was nothing but excitement.
Excited to be moved. You know, look, if I'm Kiko Alonso, I'd be excited too. You're going from a team that wasn't going to make the postseason, that's in a complete rebuild, and it's a bit of a mess, has been for a while, under Ross's leadership. Ownership, rather, to a team that's a Super Bowl contender, a legit Super Bowl contender. So if you're Kiko Alonso, you have an opportunity to be part of something special. So he's going to be, you know, on his best behavior, and he should be very excited about playing for the New Orleans Saints. Asked about the linebacking core that he's joining, this is what Kiko had to say.
Obviously, I know Rizzy. But, you know, I know of a lot of, you know, AJ, I came out with AJ. You know, I've watched, you know, DeMario, Alex, Craig. You know, I'm very, very familiar with these guys. Got a lot of respect for a lot of the guys on this team.
He has a lot of respect for a lot of the guys on this team. Someone else who has a lot of respect for the guys on this team is going to be Dante Harris. He made the 53-man roster. He's one of the six wide receivers that they're going to be carrying. And he's going to be handling punt return and kick return duties. And he impressed during camp. Undrafted rookie, showed what he could do. The Saints had went out and got Charles from the Minnesota Vikings. He got injured, never really played. They lucked up and had themselves a guy already in camp that could handle those duties and also prove that he could be a reliable pass catcher as well. This is what Deontay Harris had to say about the ride that he has been on since he arrived in training camp and now as a member of the 53-man roster of the New Orleans Saints.
I mean, it's definitely been a ride, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. I got hurt during rookie minicamp. I got hurt again during OTAs. And then I think I actually got hurt twice during OTAs. So it's definitely been a ride. But I'm just thankful for the journey and just blessed just to be here.
Thankful for the journey. He did. He had minor injuries, but he still had injuries. And if you're a guy trying to make a roster, the worst thing that could happen is you getting injured and having someone else get those reps and impress the coaching staff. And he had it happen to him in rookie minicamp and then in OTAs. But he overcame those injuries, got healthy, and won a spot on this 53-man roster. Harris himself, though, despite having to overcome those injuries and being an undrafted rookie, was confident that he would make the team.
I don't think anybody who is trying out to make it to the next level has any doubt in their mind whether they should be on a team. So, I mean, the only thing you can do is be positive and just show everybody what you got.
He was confident that he would make the roster. Him making the roster, you know, sent some guys that got a little bit more pub during the preseason and during the training camp to the practice squad. But they do have a very good six guys in the wide receiver room, led by Michael Thomas, the record setter, the $100 million man, Ted Ginn Jr., the wily vet. You also got Traquan Smith, who was drafted two years ago. In the third round out of UCF, coming off a rookie season. Keith Kirkwood, he was undrafted, coming out of Temple. He's coming off his rookie season as well. Got Austin Carr in the mix. And, of course, Deonte Harris. Ted Ginn Jr., the 34-year-old veteran wide receiver who's seen it all and still has a little bit of a giddy-up in his step and is still out there trying to get himself a Super Bowl championship. This is what he said, how the battles shook out for the wide receiver group.
However you could get on a team, you get on a team. As a young guy, you come in a lot of situations where you have a nice core in front of you, and you just got to just find out where your fit is. I think LJ, Butler, and Harris came in, they found their fit, we just got to use what they can do and be happy with their ability, just keep coming on as a room and just keep playing as one, keep fighting one another.
But you got to like this wide receiving core. It's deep. Thomas is going to take care of his business. Ted Ginn can still be somewhat reliable despite being 34 years old. He can't take the top off like he used to, but he can still beat DBs one-on-one. You're going to have Jared Cook as your pass-catching tight end. You got Alvin Kamara coming out of the backfield. That's your four guys right there. There's going to be your four top targets for Drew Brees. And then after that, he can go through his progressions. Oh, okay, we're in a four wide set. Let me hit up Keith Kirkwood, or let me hit Traquan Smith. Traquan Smith is the burner on this team. Oh, and we'll throw in Deonte Harris and Austin Carr in some packages. Oh, and if one of those guys gets hurt and gets nicked up, guess what? We have Emmanuel Butler, training camp sensation, undrafted rookie, who we signed to our practice squad. And we can simply promote him and bring him up to the 53-man roster. They got a lot of depth at that position. They have the depth. You have the reliable pass catchers in Thomas and Ted Ginn and Jared Cook and Alvin Kamara. But those other guys, now the second-year players like Traquan Smith and Keith Kirkwood in particular, are going to have to step up and be more consistent. They showed flashes last year for the Saints, but they have to be more consistent. Same thing goes for Carr, who's been in the league a couple years now too. Yeah, you're on the depth chart. You're part of the six deep at wide receiver. But when you get your chance out there and Drew Brees is going to count on you and he's going to throw a fade route to you, you better hope and pray to baby Jesus that you run your route properly, for one. You get separation from the DB, too, and that you catch the damn ball. Because Drew is only going to throw it to people that catch it. Very simple. He's not going to force it. He'll work with you and he'll try to get you going with throwing a couple passes and try to get your confidence up. We saw it last year. He did that with Traquan Smith, and he did it with Keith Kirkwood, and it paid off a little bit. But if you start having the dropsies and you're not running your route properly, Brees is going to find people on that team that can, and there's enough of them to be able to do that. So if you're Traquan Smith and you're Keith Kirkwood and you're Carr, you're Deonte Harris, when you get a chance to shine in a game, you better make it count. If not, they'll find someone else. And the front office has proven that just because you may have been drafted by the team, just because you were signed as a free agent, just because you may have had former, success elsewhere, They will cut you and find someone else to be out there because the window is closing for the Saints. It's now or never. We don't have time to hold your hand and to baby you and bring you along slowly. You got to get it together so the Saints can win the Super Bowl and hoist the Lombardi Trophy once again. We're going to take a timeout here on RP3 and Company, but we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're going to give you guys the results of our poll question later today. We asked you a poll question, a special Labor Day edition poll question of on 1037thegame.com. We'll give you the results for that and post a new poll question up there shortly. But coming up, 7:32, our boy Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com and Rivals is going to break down the latest updates on recruiting. Remember, you have a little bit of a lull period before the start of the season, but once college football gears up, it's on. And LSU's already making moves, lining up guys for 2022. Boy, that seems a little excessive, doesn't it? Can we even get to 2020 first before we're lining up guys for the 2022 signing class? But that's the state of modern recruiting, just how it is now. You're recruiting guys 2 to 3 years out. Also, we'll be talking more Raging Cajun football coming up as well. At 8:02, Nick Fontenot from the Daily Advertiser will be joining us, giving us his thoughts on all things Raging Cajuns from Saturday's opener against Mississippi State, as well as giving us a little bit of a preview about what's to come against the Liberty Flames and his thoughts on what Billy Napier had to say at yesterday's press conference. If you want to share your thoughts, if you took yesterday off and you're like, you know what, Ray? We're not going to call the ARCO Equipment Hotline on Labor Day. We're going to take it easy. We're going to let you do your thing, but we're not going to hit you up. Well, guess what? The ARCO Equipment Hotline is open right now. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. You can give us a call. Talk to us about Raging Cajuns. Talk to us about the Hoodats. Talk to us about LSU Tigers. You know, I can pretty much rap with you about all those things. As long as you're not calling and wanting to know about when the next Dancing with the Stars is on, I can help you out. Let's head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our good friend. It's been a while. Doug, good morning to you, brother. How are you today? What's on your mind?
Good morning, big guy. Good morning. Hey, man, when's the next Dancing with the Stars going to be on?
There it is.
Listen, Ray, one thing I noticed about the Cajuns, bro, and look, man, you got to give them credit. I mean, if it wouldn't have been for a few mistakes, that game could have turned a different way. You know, Levi Lewis made, God almighty, the very first play throwing an interception. But there's one observation I want to give you that I noticed, and that was that the Bulldog offensive line was so obviously to me, they were bigger than the Cajun defensive line. And still, the defensive line managed to put some pressure on that quarterback. They flush him out the pocket, make him run. Look, you got to give a shout out to the Cajuns. They played hard for their very first game against an SEC opponent. That was a pretty good game. And if it wouldn't have been for a few mistakes, that game could have went a different way. That was my observation of that game. I'm proud of the Cajuns. I thought they did well.
Doug, appreciate the phone call, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day. Doug brings up a good point. Look, Mississippi State's got the bigger offensive line, right? They got the bigger guys. They recruit. They're from the SEC. They got the big hosses on their O-line. UL did a nice job pushing the line of scrimmage. He's exactly correct. And if it wasn't for a few mistakes, I think that's why Billy Napier was so frustrated afterwards. Inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, I was there We talked to Billy, and you can tell that he felt like, you know, just like, you know, it was just like, damn, if we just would have not committed so many turnovers, if we would have just had committed, you know, executed that fourth down play, it was just a few things here and there that you could feel like, dang, you know what? They could have won the game. And look, Mississippi State outplayed them a little bit early on and did that, and yet the Cajuns were still hanging tough with them, and the Cajuns were still hanging tough with them, and it was still a manageable game. They weren't getting blown out despite committing all those errors, despite having all those issues that they did early on with Levi Lewis throwing the interception on the very first offensive play of the game. Let's head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on Chad. Real quick, Chad, before I have to hit a break, brother, what's on your mind? Good morning to you.
Man, there's a reason they want Thompson back on Mississippi State's team, man. He runs the offensive offense. There's no such thing as moral victories to me. It was 35-14. They kind of called off the dogs a little bit. UL was pumped up. Of course, UL is going to play really hard. I mean, come on, man.
Chad, telling us there, you know, that basically Mississippi State called off the dogs a little bit there at the end. There's a little truth to that. I get it. But you have to give credit for the Cajuns for not giving up. But for me, I want to see what the Cajuns do now moving forward. How do they respond? Are they going to dwell on having those mental mistakes like they did against the Cajuns? Hey, there's no moral victories. Or are they going to rebound and come out with a resounding victory on Saturday? If they struggle on Saturday against Liberty, there may be some question marks for the Cajuns this season. We'll have to see come Saturday. We got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up right after this, right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Legendary Southern University baseball coach Roger Cador.
That 1985 class that I recruited, I told those young men that they were going to be a part of history. What kind of history? I didn't know, but I told them they would be a part of history. And in 1987, they go out and beat Cal State Fullerton, yep, which was the history I was talking about.
LSU national champion and Super Bowl champion Marlon Favorite.
It made me feel comfortable to go to work every day at LSU, knowing that he embraced my passion and my love for music as well. We had fun. We were freestyling locker room. Coach Miles would come and dance.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and you're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Had a great first hour to today's show. Talked a lot about the Raging Cajuns. Got some phone calls as well. Always appreciate the thoughts there from our listeners, Doug and Chad. Much appreciated. And actually, something Chad said has inspired me, so I got to give credit to Chad for that. Got a new poll question. What's going to be something? I'm changing it based on what Chad called in with. Our poll question from yesterday on Labor Day: what were you more surprised by over the weekend? LSU's record-setting offensive outburst, an offensive explosion by the Tigers, UL holding its own against Mississippi State, or the Saints trading for Kiko Alonso? Those were your three choices. Coming in third place was LSU's offense with 25%. Then UL holding its own was 35.7%. And then the Saints trading was 37.5%. Those are your results from the poll question. Our new poll question is, did UL's opener against Mississippi State there in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome reveal more about the Cajuns or more about the Bulldogs? Pretty straightforward. More about the Cajuns, more about the Bulldogs. And what I'm saying here is what Chad's trying to allude to is that Mississippi State kind of let them back into the game and that the Cajuns did fight back, but the Bulldogs let them back in the game. So does Saturday's ending, the 38-28 defeat for Billy Napier and company against the Bulldogs of Mississippi State, does this say more about how good UL is going to be this year, or does this say more about how good or not so good Mississippi State's going to be this year? Go to 1037thegame.com right now. Vote on our latest poll question throughout today's show and the rest of the day. We'll also tweet out a link to it here shortly. I want to switch gears from Cajuns to the LSU Tigers. Tom Herman, you remember him. He was the young, dynamic, offensive-minded coach that Joe Oliva believed that he was going to hire to replace Les Miles after Jimbo Fisher spurned him not once but twice and embarrassed LSU in the process. Well, guess what? Tom Herman, he didn't want the job either. He just didn't. He used LSU in negotiations with Texas, the job he always wanted, the job he's always wanted. Well, guess what? Tom Herman's turned things around, we think, at Texas. I think people are overvaluing the win over Georgia in the Sugar Bowl last year. I was there for that game. It was impressive. Texas was the more physical team. Texas wanted it more. Georgia was sleepwalking. They had a couple players not even show up to play for the game because they were preparing for the draft. They did not want to be inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome for the Sugar Bowl because they had national championship aspirations. Apparently playing in the state of Louisiana was not kind to Georgia last year. As we know, they got curb stomped by LSU in Tiger Stadium and then got pushed around by Texas. Now, Texas was a four-loss team a year ago. But by the way, they performed and executed their game plan and was the more physical team against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl has vaulted them to be a top-10 team this year. People are like, Texas is back. I just want to tell everyone right now, and I've said this for months, pump your brakes. Don't be surprised if you see LSU go into Austin this Saturday and beat them by double-digit points. I think Texas may be the most overrated team in the country, and I don't even think it's close. Yes, this is a team that beat Oklahoma last year and beat up on Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. This is also a team that lost four games. Their quarterback is not Vince Young 2.0. He's limited. Put money on it right now. LSU's going to beat them by double-digit points come Saturday. I don't care if the game is in Austin. I don't care if the game is played on Mars. Texas is the most overrated team in the country. By far. And they love overvaluing. And we do this all the time. We see a traditional brand. Remember Miami? Remember what LSU did to Miami last year in the opener? Everyone thought Miami had come back because the season before, they'd won a bunch of games. They put together a winning streak. They had the turnover chain, and everyone's like so desperate to have Miami back because we love having the traditional programs be relevant. So we talked ourselves into Miami's back, Miami's back. Well, then they lost their last three games, including a stinker to Pitt that season, a bad Pitt team at that, get manhandled by Clemson, lose their bowl game. But people still loved Miami because they're like, hey, Miami's back. Look what they were able to do last year, so forth and so forth. And what happened when they got on the field with LSU inside AT&T Stadium in last season's season opener there in Jerry World? What happened? They got smacked in the mouth. They got pushed around. They got punked. They fired their coach, Mark Richt, and now they're on another new head coach. I've seen this play out before. It's not to say that Tom Herman is not going to be a guy that's going to eventually turn around Texas. But just because you want something to happen doesn't mean it's going to happen. If you're trying to tell me that Texas is on the same level as Alabama and Clemson and Georgia and all these other teams, no. Georgia didn't want to be in the Sugar Bowl. I'm not an SEC apologist. They should have stepped up. But I've seen Alabama do the same damn thing. Same thing. Seen it. Oh, we didn't get into the national championship picture because we lost to Florida in the SEC championship game and Tim Tebow. We'll get to the Sugar Bowl. All over ourselves. We don't want to be here. We're focused on the NFL draft. Get embarrassed in the Sugar Bowl. Bama's been embarrassed in the Sugar Bowl by the likes of Utah and Oklahoma. Teams nowadays, especially these big power teams, the top echelon teams, if they're not in the mix for the college football playoff, they don't care. And you see it in their bowl game performance. Texas cared. It meant more to Texas to play in that bowl game. It meant more to try to end their season with a victory over a team from the SEC. Georgia did not want to be there. They were checked out. That plays a huge role in that. Is Texas a good team? Sure. But if you're telling me that Texas is on the same level with LSU, and I'm not an LSU fan, then you're crazy. Then you're spending your afternoons huffing paint thinner, and you need to reevaluate your life decisions. Because Texas is not even remotely on the same level as LSU. Not even close. And they have all the motivation of all the BS that's happened behind the scenes where Herman used LSU as a negotiating tactic to get the job at Texas, to get more money at Texas. And that's exactly what he did. And when Joe Leva had egg all over his face because Jimbo Fisher spurned him not once but twice, and he had to keep Les Miles after wanting to fire him, and then he brought him back, and then he fired him anyway during the season. And then they still had Ed O do a very good job as the interim coach, leading them to a bowl game victory over Louisville. But even that, they were still trying to find someone else. We love Bebe on the Bayou, but he was not their first choice or their second or their third. So now this has got a little juice to it, right? It's got a little juice. And now they got the new high-powered offense. If you're telling me that you think that Texas is going to beat LSU, you're crazy. And I'm not one to go out and make proclamations like that. But there is no way in hell it's going to happen. Tom Herman, though, is the head coach. They're at the University of Texas. He leads the Longhorns. And he knows he's going to have his hands full with Dave Aranda and that LSU defense this weekend, Saturday, there in Austin. And Tom Herman said about this yesterday during his press conference with UT about his relationship with the LSU defensive coordinator.
I don't know that, you know, we've talked on the phone or gone out to dinner, I know that, but when we see each other, you know, it's, hey, how you doing, catching up, all that stuff. And I don't know, it is unique, his language, certainly.
It is unique, his language, certainly. I'm not even for sure what that means. What are you talking about, Tom Herman? What are you talking about? Texas opened up the season while LSU defeated Georgia Southern inside Tiger Stadium. The Longhorns opened up the season at home versus Louisiana Tech. Took down those Bulldogs. This is what he had to say about the team's win over Louisiana Tech.
I thought our guys, you know, we talked about that game Saturday after, but you know, our guys played with a lot of confidence, played fast. We were fresh. We were physical, and was proud of the effort.
Proud of the effort, but Louisiana Tech is not LSU. No offense, Bulldogs fans. I know you're passionate out there. I know you love your team there up in the I-20 corridor. Herman also said, you know, obviously they win their opener against Louisiana Tech. He did also provide an injury update to one of his big impact players, Jordan Whittington.
Injury, really nothing, no changes to last week other than Jordan Whittington. He has torn the adductor off of his pubic symphysis, sports hernia again. So we are finalizing plans to get him to Philadelphia to get that thing fixed again.
Herman also would go on to further talk about, you know, they have some issues there at running back, obviously. But he, being an offensive guy, a former offensive coordinator, said yesterday during his press conference that the lack of running backs on the actual depth chart, on the roster, healthy ones, doesn't change anything when it comes to game day, and it won't change anything when it comes to Saturday when they host LSU.
Not on game day. I think you got to do whatever it takes to win, especially when you're playing a top 10 team with such a good defense like LSU. So I think in practice, you know, that these guys have been wearing green jerseys, been non-contact for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. So, but on game day, you got to turn them loose and do whatever it takes to win.
Turn them loose and do whatever it takes to win. Herman and Aranda do know each other from back in the day when they played at California Lutheran University, as you know, a national powerhouse. But they know each other, and they've been friendly ever since. So Texas, they say they're ready. They open up the season with a win over Louisiana Tech. They got some issues, some injuries, got some depth issues at running back, but they're going to be prepared. Tom Herman is ready to take his program to the next level. And they're going to try to do so by welcoming LSU to town on Saturday as the Tigers visit the Longhorns in a historic meeting, a battle between two top 10 ranked opponents. We'll talk more about that, in particularly Tom Herman and his thoughts on LSU, on quarterback Joe Burrow, and his relationship with Coach O after this quick timeout. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Talk a little bit, Tom Herman. He was the guy that Joe Oliva wanted, courted, and Tom Herman teased him and said, yeah, I'm interested. Why don't you buy me some things? Oh, no, I'm going to go with this guy instead. Oliva got spurned. Tom Herman got the job he wanted at the rate that he wanted. And that's a University of Texas head coach. And LSU got Ed Orgeron. I do believe things have probably turned out for the best for both. Now, we said in the last, before the break, about Herman's relationship with Dave Aranda. I actually misspoke. That was actually his relationship with Coach O. It is a cordial one. You heard some chuckles there from some of the reporters because obviously they know the background on how he was trying to get the job and made LSU feel like he wanted the job, and then Coach O wanted the job and he had to wait for the job, all that kind of thing. So you can imagine there's probably some awkwardness there between the two. But this is what Tom Herman had to say about his former teammate, Dave Aranda, the mad genius on defense for the LSU Tigers.
Enjoyable guy to be around, very cerebral. You know, he came in, I think I actually hosted him on his visit to Cal Lutheran, and came in as a player. Medically, he'd had 5 or 6 shoulder surgeries, so he was done pretty early. So he transitioned into student coach. But we've stayed in touch throughout the years. I remember when I was named special teams coordinator at Sam Houston State, he was at Texas Tech, and I actually drove from Huntsville all the way to Lubbock to spend a couple days trying to learn some special teams, you know, drills and whatnot. And he was nice enough to have me stay at his apartment, all that stuff. So we bounce ideas off each other quite regularly. Haven't in the last couple years because we knew we were going to be playing each other. But, you know, prior to us finding that part out, you know, we've stayed in pretty close contact.
So obviously Herman, an offensive-minded guy, has immense amount of respect for his former teammate, former and sounds like friend, Dave Aranda. They haven't really spoken a lot over the last couple of years because they knew they were playing one another, which is probably a smart move. Herman talked about how he feels about Texas scheduling SEC opponents in non-conference play.
The ones that weren't already scheduled, certainly. I know it's his vision to have a marquee non-conference home game every other year. And so really at the end of the day, he comes to me with suggestions and and then it's I'm good with it, or no, I'm not good with it. But knowing what his objective is to give our fan base a pretty big heavy hitter, at least once every other year at home.
So does that sound like a head coach that's pleased with his athletic director scheduling SEC opponents? Because it doesn't to me. That sure does sound like a cat that's like, yeah, he did this, and he wants a marquee game, and oh God, I really would rather just play North Texas, but now I got to host LSU, and they pay me, and I have to do this. He doesn't sound great about it. This is what Tom Herman had to say about LSU's vaunted defense, who put on a show in the opener against Georgia Southern.
One, the size and strength up front. I mean, three guys that are starting up front that are well over 300 pounds. I think one or two over 350 pounds. And then, Caleb on Chase on as the, kind of the edge setter, pass rusher. I mean, he's elite. And then they've got two All-Americans in the secondary as well. So this will be as talented of a defense as we have seen in our time here. And it's not just heavy in one area, I mean, it's not just, hey, they're great in the secondary, but they're average up front. I mean, they've got NFL players at pretty much every position.
So he's got some respect there. You got NFL players at nearly every position. Once again, I'll say it before. I'll say it again. I'll say it all week. And I've said this for months. I was there inside the Superdome. I watched Texas be the more physical team against Georgia. I understand why everyone's jumping on the train. But just like everyone jumped on the train two seasons ago with Miami and then again at the early part of last season, desperately wanting them to be back. How people, media folks, have desperately wanted USC to be back and keeps trying to prop them up. They're not on the same level. They are in down cycles. As much as you want Texas to be back, doesn't mean they actually are. We got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we're going to talk recruiting with the best in the business. Our good friend Jarrett Rozier joins us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, and we are broadcasting right here on Acadiana's Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're also broadcasting from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also find us on the Simulcast Stadium Network 32.1, as well as LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest of the day. He is a recruiting reporter slash analyst, guru, whatever you want to call him, there at TigerDetails.com. He joins us every Tuesday to give us the latest updates on all things recruiting involving LSU, the Raging Cajuns, and, of course, Acadiana. It's our good friend, Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. We've been talking so much about getting back into the action, and what an exciting weekend and an exciting one to come. Yeah. I am a little bit jealous of you, though. I saw you had a chance to bust into the Argyle a little bit earlier because you were braving the frozen tundras of the Superdome press box. I'm still a month and a half away from even being able to think about pulling sweaters back out.
Yes. I rocked the sweater game for the season opener for the Raging Cajuns there inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome because, the press box at the Superdome is a meat locker, as we all know. For anyone that's covered a high school state championship or the Saints or a bowl game. All right, brother, let's get right to it. I want to start off things. I want to get to the impact that this game can have on recruiting. Obviously, it could play a huge role because it's going to be held there in the state of Texas. But let's start off with a couple of some news that came out here recently about recruiting. Let's talk about LSU first. Raheem Jarrett, among his reactions, he was one of the most notable reactions to LSU's opener. And I guess it kind of reaffirmed his commitment. What'd you make of some of the LSU recruits and their reactions to the season opener by the Tigers?
Sure. I mean, really, the guys that LSU is recruiting, and for that matter, there were a lot of people that were, a lot of prospects that were excited to see what UL was able to do against Mississippi State. But that LSU game, I think, caught the attention of a lot of people around the country. I mean, you've heard for so long that the offense was going to look different year in, year out, and then certainly this entire offseason. But you've heard it enough that there was some skepticism heading in. And so to see Joe Burrow and company come out and score touchdowns in the first five drives and everything along those lines, and I mean, just a huge victory to open the season for a team that against opponents like a Georgia Southern have not always come out and you know, handled things with that much of an exclamation point to it, I guess you could say. And so that certainly caught the attention of a lot of these prospects. Raheem Jarrett, I think his thoughts just saying that he's committed to LSU, plans to stay that way, and talking about how much he's been talking to T.J. Finley and looking forward to coming to be a part of everything that's happening at LSU, just overall as a program, but the direction that the offense is going, I think, is incredibly encouraging, because as much as we've talked about the fact that LSU is going to have to continue to stay atop its game for this 2020 class, despite the fact that they've already got 23 of the spots filled, just the nature of the class with guys like Raheem on the East Coast and just people all over the country, it's a little bit tougher sometimes to hold on to those top guys from much farther away when the Ohio States or Clemson's or USC or whoever it may be ends up calling, depending on who the prospect is and where he is. And so this fall and the way this fall played out was going to be big for a lot of those guys. And Raheem was one that I think there's always as much nervousness of whether he ends up staying a part of this class or flipping to another program, potentially someplace closer to home. And so to hear that type of reaction from him, I thought was, recruiting-wise, some of the biggest news, if not the biggest news for LSU this weekend. But really just a lot of excitement across the board. You hear guys like Corey Moore and T.J. Finley and Kayshawn Boutte talking about how much they love the offense and think that the Tigers look like they have the potential to go and compete for the SEC this year and really do some huge things. Mason Smith, the big 2021 defensive line target down in Terrebonne, was one of the guys that was on hand. He loved what he saw from the team as a whole. Defense, Jaqueline Roy, same thing. And so just excitement all around. Certainly starts with the offense, but not limited to that. And so that's a great way to start a big fall for LSU, not only on the field, but what that means from the recruiting standpoint.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, you mentioned it, some prospects out there. They also were reacting to what they saw from the Raging Cajuns as they took on the Bulldogs of Mississippi State there inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome on Saturday. What can you tell us? What were some of the responses there for some of the prospects that the Cajuns are trying to lock up for the next year's class?
Yeah, talking to a few of the guys the past couple of days, it was really, despite the Cajuns coming out on the short end of the final score against Mississippi State, there was a lot of excitement for the way UL played and just being a few plays here and there from making it that much more interesting, because there was a big stretch of that game where I think the Bulldogs were getting a little bit more from the Cajuns than probably a lot of people in the state of Mississippi had anticipated. And so a lot of the reaction from prospects was, look how close this program is to knocking off an SEC opponent to start the year and surprising a lot of people, and knowing that the program is heading in a positive direction, and that this 2020 class that you and I have talked a couple times about, that they feel like they can come in and continue to add to that momentum and really continue to build things in the right way, where if they are right there in that game, they can be right there in just about any game and just, you know, need to clean a couple things up here and there and maybe make a different outcome and an even bigger statement. I know, you know, talking to Errol Rogers Jr., he was excited to see the way some of the receivers were used. He mentioned Jamarcus Bradley and Jamal Bell in particular, liking seeing the way they're being utilized in the offense and kind of seeing a role for himself there. But really across the board, anyone that I talked to who is kind of considering the Cajuns, a lot of the prospects that are committed or are really kind of being heavily recruited by the Cajuns did make the trip to New Orleans to go take in that game and just loved everything they saw from the program and the direction moving forward.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier, recruiting analyst / reporter / guru for TigerDetails.com. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, I want to talk about some news that's been happening on the recruiting trail. Let's LSU. They got Weston Franklin, an O lineman there from IMG Academy for the 2021 class. He's listed LSU among his top four. How big of a get is that? I know it's early, but how big of a deal is that?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch with him. I do think LSU is in great position. Weston talking with one of our colleagues at Rivals, Woody Womack, referenced LSU, South Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Miami as kind of his, you know, I say four early favorites, but with the way the recruiting cycle goes, it's not quite as early for a 2021 to be looking at a top four as it may have been under the old system. And you can tell he's pretty excited about LSU and the direction things are going, just kind of glowed talking about the program and Coach O and Coach Craig, coaching the offensive line. And I think that's really big for the Tigers, and in particular just because of the way this 2020 class is coming together, with still just Marlon Martinez, and then if Cam Jackson ends up being an offensive lineman, those are the only guys right now that would potentially be offensive linemen in this 2020 class. And so you're going to be looking, if you're LSU, for some of the guys that are currently on your roster to hang around, and, you know, some of the younger guys on your roster to really be able to make a quick impact next year to help kind of mask where they're at right now with one true offensive line prospect, potentially two offensive line prospects in this class, and probably not a whole lot more with how close to filling the class they are. And then you're going to be looking to that 2021 class to be able to make up for some of that shortcoming in an otherwise great class, and looking to guys like a Weston Franklin, if you can ultimately sign him down the road to come in and make an impact pretty quickly, because there is such a small addition to that offensive line group coming for 2020.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, when I saw this the last few days, I was like, really? And in this news, and maybe it's because I'm a little bit older, so, and you mentioned it right there about, you know, things happen a little bit quicker. LSU already has a commitment for 2022. My man, we're not even done with the 2020 class, and they're picking up commitments, the young man out of Beaumont. First of all, what can you tell us about the commitment? And second of all, is this where recruiting is trending towards, where guys are committing even earlier and earlier, like as freshmen and sophomores?
Yeah, absolutely. Bryce Anderson, the 2022 I mean, he's an athlete for Westbrook, at Westbrook High School out in Beaumont, projects as a safety. He committed on Sunday evening at 5 o'clock after another great visit to LSU and was on hand for that season opener against Georgia Southern. And you've seen for a while now some guys committing pretty early in their high school careers. I think it initially was pretty limited instances. You saw it with some quarterbacks here and there and some really top-level guys. You saw Dylan Moses commit pretty early and just some guys like that are really elite prospects. And I think we're just going to continue to see, at least through that, 2 years ahead time frame, I think we're going to see more of that because of, again, how much the recruiting cycle is now moving up to where you're looking at LSU being very close to finish with its 2020 class by the summer of 2019. And so while those coaches are going to continue to work those relationships with the 2020 guys and know that it's not done until signing day rolls around in December, when they plan to finalize most of that class months ahead of the old national signing day, traditional period. A lot of what LSU is doing now is into 2021 and 2022 because they are so close to finish that 2020 class. And so wasn't really surprised to see Bryce Anderson commit. I know LSU's been a program that he kind of grew up really admiring, and particularly for a guy that projects as a DB, LSU is a place that some of those guys can really lock into early. Loved everything he saw again Saturday, had visited before and really enjoyed it, enjoys talking to all the coaches, certainly Coach Raymond and Coach Bush high up on that list. But I wasn't really surprised to see it. I think it's a nice get for LSU to start that class. They have now one guy on board for 2021, and I think we'll see a lot more following in the coming months. And that's Landon Watson, the defensive end from Hutto, Texas. And then you look at Bryce Anderson, another Texas guy starting off the 2022 class.
Wrapping things up here with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. Jarrett, quickly, how big of a recruiting how much of the Saturday's game between LSU and UT is going to play a role in recruiting for the Tigers?
I don't think you can understate a top 10 matchup of that magnitude. Two big conference teams, neighboring states sharing a lot of recruiting ground, the same way we talk about an LSU-Alabama matchup and an LSU-Texas A&M matchup. There's going to be a lot of eyes on this one. It's really the only game that I think a lot of people, outside of these fan bases, just casual fans around the country, and certainly around the region, it's one of the only matchups really that a lot of people will be watching in that time slot Saturday. And so whether Texas prospects are on hand, which there will be a lot of Texas prospects in Austin that day for that magnitude of a game to be played at Texas, but also a lot of people will be watching on television. I think it's a great opportunity for LSU to send a big message to a state where it has traditionally recruited quite a bit, and obviously you see with Landon and Bryce, that's part of the plan. Regardless of the national approach, Texas will always be big for LSU, and so if they can go out there and take care of business like I feel pretty confidently they can, it could send a pretty big message and be a nice boost as they start to build out the rest of these upcoming classes.
Get you out of here with this, Jarrett. Your prediction, give me your score, winner and loser, this Saturday. I know you're going to Austin. I'm a little jealous. won't you go ahead and give us your prediction, brother?
Hey, I couldn't pass up a trip to Austin. And then the football is a nice lanyap too. But I really feel really good about this game for LSU. And, I was telling you, I've been saying for a while, 37-24 LSU. And that might be closer than it ends up being. I think it has the makings of an Oregon game back
a few years ago where everyone's watching and everyone's quickly realizing, uh-oh, LSU is pretty serious this year.
Jarrett, appreciate your insight as always, brother. Enjoy Austin. Try to stay out of trouble. Try. And I use that word loosely, my friend. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah. I've never not enjoyed Austin, but I also don't know that I've ever completely stayed out of trouble there either.
Have fun, brother.
Thanks, bro.
That's Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, joining us talking all things recruiting and how the season openers played a role in recruiting for LSU as well as for the Cajuns. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, a little Houston Astros baseball talk. They won again. I know, you're surprised. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Welcome back. I promised you Houston Astros baseball talk. I'm going to deliver. The Stros won yesterday in the first of two games at the Milwaukee Brewers. They took the game 3-2. The Astros are now 90-49 on the year. The calendar has turned September, and they already have 90 wins on the year. Springer had himself, well, a Springer dinger, 2-for-4 at the plate. Alex Bregman was 4-of-5. He just continues on his toward late season pace after that lull in July. And Garrett Cole went out there, and he didn't throw a no-hitter like his teammate Justin Verlander did, but he did go 6 strong innings, only giving up 1 run on 3 hits while striking out 14. That's what we call pretty good. Astros are going to continue looking to continue their toward pace as they'll take on the Brewers once again tonight. 6:35 pregame, first pitch 7:10. You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game. When we come back, Nick Fondo joins us right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III talks sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they're looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. You are also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. We have a poll question up. You can go vote on it right now. It's at 103.7 The Game. The question is, did UL's opener against Mississippi State reveal more about the Cajuns or more about the Bulldogs? And right now, it's more about the Cajuns. 66.7% of the vote say it was more about the Raging Cajuns, only 33.3% more about the Bulldogs. You can go vote on that all day at 103.7thegame.com, and we will update on tomorrow's show the final results from our poll question of the day. We've talked a lot of Raging Cajuns on today's show, rightfully so. Billy Napier had his press conference yesterday. And look, they're coming off their season opener where they showed some flashes. They also had some mistakes. We're going to get an honest take on what the Raging Cajuns did and did not do with our next guest as we head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He covers the Raging Cajuns for the Daily Advertiser. He's our good friend. He's the one and only Nick Fondo. Nick, good morning to you. How are you today, my friend?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm doing well.
Doing well. Okay, let's start back. You were there. Yeah, we actually sat next to each other in the press box at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. And it was a little bit of a weird game. I think we can admit to that, where, you know, the Cajuns kept committing errors, turnovers, not picking up first downs on a fourth and one play where they try to get a little too cute for their own good, so forth and so forth. But yet they still had a chance, and they battled back, and they showed a lot of fight. Your thoughts on what you saw Saturday inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, Nick?
Well, I've been pretty much telling anybody who asks me, I feel like this is as close to what I would refer to as a moral victory that I've ever been a part of or ever encountered or ever seen. I mean, they're coming away from this game with a loss, but with so much positive momentum and positive takeaways from the game. And if they clean up those mistakes, if they don't have, you know, those early turnovers, a couple of penalties, they probably win this game. So, you know, like, I know that there's no such thing as moral victories, and, you know, all coaches will always tell you that. But this right here just feels like what would be a moral victory. I mean, they're riding this positive momentum into the next game, and everybody, all the players, all the coaches are positive. It's all positive takeaways from this game. So yes, they did lose, but I feel like they're gonna get some good positive momentum going into the next week.
We're talking with Nick Fonneau. He has been helping out covering the Raging Cajuns for the Daily Advertiser. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, let's also – I want to talk about the running game because it is a three-headed monster, and Raymond Calais could not be stopped. He averaged 10 yards a pop, and Trey Regis looked really good. Elijah Mitchell, they bottled him up. But what did you think about the running game? Did you feel like maybe they went away from it a little too much, or was that simply Mississippi State forcing them to do so? Did you think they used their running backs, the rotation properly? Your thoughts on what the Raging Cajuns were able to do with the running game?
Well, I mean, that's the strength of the team. So I thought we would see a lot more of the running backs. And, you know, we were even commenting up there, you know, it took us a while to see Trey Regis get in the game. It took us a while to see Mitchell get in the game. You know, I know Kale was hot and he was the hot hand, and I know they're going to do that hot hand thing. But, no, I did think they went away from the run game a lot. And, you know, Levi Lewis was struggling early on. I felt like, you know, maybe they could have gone on the run early to try to maybe give him a little bit more time to settle in. And once he settled in, he played well. So, I do think that they didn't use the run game as well as they could have, and that perhaps could have sort of paid dividends for them early on in that game, because Levi Lewis was clearly shaken up. His first pass was an interception. And then if they go back to the run game and just kind of slow it down, give him time for those jitters to go down, it could have helped them out. So, you know, those three running backs are really good. They're among the best, you know, three-headed monster in the country. And, you know, if you're having a bad time, if you're not playing well, just hand the ball to one of those guys and they could probably get you out of trouble. So I feel like they probably could have used those guys a little more.
We're talking with Nick Fonneau of the Daily Advertiser. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, can we talk about that fourth and one play? Because I feel like you could look back at that, and that could be a big turning point for the Cajuns. They were running the ball extremely well. Mississippi State could not stop them. I understand that you don't want to be traditional and you don't want to be vanilla and just line up and try to get a first down, but do you feel like they got a little too cute for their own good on that fourth and one play that resulted in a turnover on downs?
Absolutely. I mean, they were trying to do some sort of double pass or something, and Napier said that, you know, the guys that had worked on it all week, it was a play that they had executed a bunch in practice, and when the time came, they pretty much said, "Coach, we want to do this play," and he rolled with it, and it didn't work out. So, yeah, it was getting a little bit too cute. You know, it was – I think it was a little bit too early for, you know, quote unquote, a desperation play. And that's kind of what it felt like there, where he was trying to, you know, get desperate and pull a trick out of his hat. And it seemed like maybe a little bit too early to do that. So, you know, that's one of those mistakes, one of those early mistakes they had in the game where you look back and you go, man, if we don't do this, you know, there's two or three where you just scratch your head and, you know, kick yourself, because if we don't make those mistakes with 3 minutes to go, it's a one score game. You know, take away a couple of those early mistakes, and they win this game. So, yeah, it was a little bit too early to get cute with that play, and obviously it didn't work out in their favor.
Nick, what did you think about the defense and their performance, how they were able to step up? I know they still gave up a ton of points, and they still gave up a ton of yardage, especially on the ground. The running game was, in particular, they were gouged by the Mississippi State running back. But do you think they've made strides since last season?
Definitely, and if you're being honest, that's the only reason why the Cajuns were in this game, because they kept giving Mississippi State these short fields. And, you know, early in the game it was 7-0, and State gets the ball back and they're driving. The defense holds and forces them into no points there, keeping the game at 7-0. So every time, you know, the offense would kind of make a mistake, they called the defense to bail them out. The defense did, and I think if you look back and you watch the game, and, you know, we were actually talking about it in the press box how, you know, man, the defense is playing well. They had given up like 300 yards. It didn't even feel like that because they were keeping the Cajuns in the game, and that's the reason why at the end of the game, you know, you're within one score. I think the defense played outstanding. I think they're improving. They're buying in. Ron Roberts is doing a great job with the defense. I think they're only going to get better. And like Saturday, it showed that they are improving, and they're going to be a strong, force to be reckoned with on this team.
We're talking with Nick Fontenot of the Daily Advertiser. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, let's push forward. Let's look forward to this Saturday. Home opener at Cajun Field. The Liberty Flames come to town, or as I like to call them, the Fighting Hugh Freezes. So everyone knows the head coach. Not too many people know that much about the opponent. We know they lost their opener against Syracuse. What did Billy Napier and company have to say about Liberty at yesterday's presser?
A lot of coach speak, you know, a lot of, you know, they're big and strong and fast, and, you know, they're a good football team and well coached and all that stuff. But I think some of that stuff is true. I mean, they do have some big guys in the defense, and, you know, Hugh Freeze is a heck of a coach. And I know that, you know, he was going through some things with his illness, and I mean, he coached from a wheelchair last week, and they're talking about him maybe coaching from a hospital bed this week, and they're bringing a hospital bed in the press box so he can be there. And, you know, it doesn't matter where he's coaching from, what he's coaching from. He's a heck of a coach, and he's going to have this team ready. So, you know, UL is riding this positive momentum from this game this weekend, but Liberty's coming in to win the game. And not only that, Liberty's 3-0 all time against Sun Belt opponents. So they're coming in to win this game. Hugh Freeze is coming to win this game. The Cajuns do not need to sleep on Liberty.
Cajuns do not need to sleep on Liberty. I like that. Nick, what do you want to see out of the Cajuns on offense on Saturday? If you feel like if they can win the game, if they're going to win the game, what do they need to do better than they did on Saturday?
I just feel like Levi Lewis needs to play a full game. He needs to come in with the confidence that he had in the second half of the Mississippi State game. Come out with that confidence right away, man. This is your team. And I know that, you know, he exudes confidence, and he has the team behind him, and he's such a competitor. And we in the media, we always talk about how much we like the kid and everything. He needs to come out with that confidence that he had in the second half. Come out in the first quarter, punch Liberty in the mouth, get the game off to the right track. And you can tell once he started playing well, the whole team started playing well. And so I think he realized that. I think he grew up in that game. Between the first quarter and the fourth quarter, he was a completely different player. I think he finally realizes the magnitude of the responsibility that he has. I think he's going to take the next step. So that's what I'd like to see. Come out in the first quarter, play with the same confidence you played with the fourth quarter in the Mississippi State game, and I think that's going to take the Cajuns on to some of the things that they want to accomplish this year.
Wrapping things up here with Nick Fontenot of the Daily Advertiser. He joins us courtesy of the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Nick, one last thing, man. It's a non-Raging Cajun question for you. How excited, brother, are you going to be? We make the announcement now that you're going to be part of the Southside High Sharks broadcast team on Mustang 107.1. Jason Burns is going to be the play-by-play man, and you, my friend, are going to be the color analyst for all of the Southside High Sharks football games, their first varsity season as a program. How excited are you about being in the booth on Friday night, brother?
Yeah, man, I'm pretty excited about it. You know, Southside High is one of those schools that, just opened up in the parish. I actually live in the school zone, so I'm very familiar with Southside High. This is something that I wanted to do my whole life. It's call games, and, you know, I've tried to get opportunities, and I finally have it. So I'm ready for it. Jason and I have talked several times we're pumped up. So, you know, as far as the Sharks go on the field, I don't know how successful they're going to be. You know, it's their first season. They're probably going to have some bumps and bruises, but we're going to be there all along the way to take y'all through it. So, you know, if you're interested in Southside football, it's going to be a good season. So, yeah, I'm pretty pumped up about it, if you can't tell.
I can tell, man. I can tell. You're ready for it to be Friday night right now, brother. Well, look, appreciate your time, and enjoy being on the call on Friday nights for Southside High, brother. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Thanks, Raymond.
That's Nick Fondo. Covers Raging Cajuns for the Daily Advertiser, and you can hear him every Friday night on Mustang 107.1 as part of the broadcast team for Southside High Sharks football. Mustang 107.1 is your home for Southside High football this season. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll talk a little high schools, a little Church Point football season preview coming up right here on Acadiana's Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We appreciate you making us part of your morning. Be safe out there as you commute to work or to school. I'm Raymond Parts III, host of RP3 and Company. Look, the last couple of weeks we've been trying to get you as much high school season previews as possible. We started off with all of the Lafayette Parish schools. Then we ventured out to St. Landry and St. Martin Parish last week. We're doing the same thing this week. Hidden, St. Landry, St. Martin, Acadia, and, of course, Iberia. But today, I want to talk about Church Point. That's right. They had themselves a pretty darn good season, guys. They only lost 3 regular season games, and they won a bunch of good games. They beat Kaplan last year, 30-24. That's how good Church Point was last year. They beat Eunice, 22-20. Eunice went on to win the state championship, okay? They also had a couple games get away from them. Crowley was a 4-point loss, 20-16, that they probably should have won. And Iota was as well, 15-12. But it was a good year for Church Point. And coach, longtime head coach, John Craig Arsenault, talked about how it was a season of what-ifs for his team.
Well, you know, last season, we kind of looked back on it as a season of what-ifs. You know, we beat the 3A state champ during the regular season, Eunice, 22-20. We lose to the state runner-up in the playoffs, 57-56. Kaplan's a semifinal team. We beat them during the regular season. And Iota, the other semifinal team, we led them up until the last 4 minutes of the regular season game. So, you know, we feel like we played with the best teams in 3A last year. We just got to try to find a way to make a few more plays in some of those games. And we could have maybe found ourselves in New Orleans.
And he's not lying there. Look, Church Point advanced to the second round of the Class 3A playoffs. They lost an absolute shootout to Sterlington, 57-56. Okay? 57-56. Sterlington would go on and lose a shootout in the state championship game, 59-47, to Eunice, a team Church Point beat during the regular season. Okay? So Church Point is legit, okay? And they also beat Kaplan during the regular season, and Kaplan was a state semifinalist. They lost to Eunice, okay? So Church Point was right there in the mix. So they got a lot to hang their hat on, a very good season, but Church Point wants more. They want more than just a second-round playoff appearance and winning 7 games. And the motto that they're having there this year, and this is something that Coach Arsenault has done for years, if you've followed his career. Look, it's all about playing for one another. That's their motto for the 2019 season.
Well, you know, the thing we struggled with last year was character. So our big thing this year has been play for one another. You know, go out there and play for that guy next to you, hold one another accountable, and let's see if we can't do the things in those tight spots to make sure we're being disciplined, making the plays, and see if we just can't make those one or two plays to get us over the hump. So we've really pushed the message of, look, let's play for one another. Let's not be selfish. Let's do what's best for the team. Play for that guy next to you, and let's see what happens 10 weeks from now.
Coach Arsenault talked about some of the impact players that Church Point will be featuring this season on the offensive side of the ball.
Well, on offense, we have 4 returning starters. Two of those guys are changing positions. Last year, Jace Benoit started at left tackle. We're going to move him to center. And Kane Romero started at left guard. We're going to move him to right tackle just to try to make all our parts fit that we have coming back. And, you know, of course, we got our 1-2 punch in the backfield of Rodney Dupuy, who's got a chance. He's 700 yards short of breaking the school's all-time rushing record. And then the guy I consider Mr. Everything, Gavin Richard, plays left halfback for us, but he's a kid who could play all three positions for us. He blocks, he returns kicks, he can catch the ball. You know, so those are going to be our two go-to guys on offense, and they're going to get the majority of the carries. And, you know, we're excited about those two guys having the football in their hands.
On the other side of the ball on defense, Church Point returns some starters, some big-time impact players. This is what Coach Arsenault had to say about that side of the ball.
Well, we have five guys coming back. Of course, our most impactful player is our nose, Tony Gibson, who was an all-state player last year as a sophomore. Tony's 6 foot, 285, and can move around and really controls the center of the line. We have inside linebacker Christopher Daly coming back, and Christopher's a kid who can play inside and outside for us. And you know, we're looking for him to be able to make a bunch of plays. And we got our two safeties coming back. Kavon Chavis and Ethan Castile, who Ethan started last year as a sophomore and really got better as the year went. Kavon's going to be a senior, and Kavon's a real athletic kid, likes to hit, so we expect to see him getting his nose down in there and making some plays in the run game.
And look, you know what you're going to get from a Coach Arsenault team. You know what you're going to get when you watch Church Point football. It's going to be the wing tee. That's the offense that he loves to run. He's run for a generation. He jokingly talked about how that's what he's all about. They're not going to change.
We play the 3-4 or the 50 on defense, okay. And we wing T on offense. Been a wing T coordinator on offense for 27 years now. I don't think anybody's going to teach this old dog any new tricks.
Not going to teach him any new tricks, but Coach Arsenault may have the players to make a deep run into the Class 3A playoffs. Church Point's one of the best teams in the area. Could be a very dangerous team, so keep an eye out on what they're able to do there at Church Point High. Coach Arsenault, best of luck to he and his squad for this upcoming season. Look, guys, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood, but sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig. Tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. We got to take a quick timeout, so don't turn the dial. When we come back, we're going to get an in-depth preview on UL's opponent this week, the Liberty Flames, from Damian Sordelet. He joins us live right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network. That's 32.1. It's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber at 133 and 1133 in high definition. We've been talking a lot of Raging Cajuns. We've been talking LSU. We've been talking Saints. Once again, guys, you can go to 1037thegame.com and vote on our latest poll question of the day. It's, did UL's opener against Mississippi State reveal more about the Cajuns or more about the Bulldogs? More about the Cajuns or more about the Bulldogs? You can go vote right now. Currently, you, the listener, is saying that this is more about the Raging Cajuns. Yes, 75% of the votes right now say it's more about the Cajuns, what you saw inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, rather than the Bulldogs only getting 25% of the vote right now. You can have this poll. It's open all day today. We'll be updating it, and we'll update you with the results on tomorrow's RP3 in company. So make sure to vote on that. We've also sent out a link to the poll on our Twitter account at 1037 The Game. So how do we feel about the Raging Cajuns? How do we feel about what they can do? Do we think they're going to bounce back? Do we think they're going to put back what occurred, the disappointment of maybe letting one get by them against Mississippi State inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome on Saturday? Are they going to be able to put that behind them? I think they should be able to. You know, Liberty does come in. They are coached by a very good offensive-minded coach in Hugh Freeze. We saw what he was able to do there at Ole Miss. But UL should be the favorite. They've opened as the favorite. So what do we expect to see from them? What are they going to be able to bring to the table? What can we expect to see from the Flames? You know, we don't know a lot about them. We know that this is going to be game two for them. They opened up the season against Syracuse. So we'll see what they're going to be able to bring. You know, it usually takes a coach a long time to get to the point to establish the way he wants his culture. I mean, you can look at Billy Napier and his team and his coaching staff, and they'll tell you the same thing. It's still a process, right? The first season is a learning process because you're still learning about you. You're learning about how you want to be as a head coach with this program. You're evaluating your talent. You're figuring out who can be placed where and how. So it's a little bit of a learning process the whole time. And look, you also don't have a lot of time for recruiting. That takes time as well. Usually takes a new coach to really put his stamp on a program, usually year three. Usually takes year three. You know, if you want to say, look at Nick Saban at Alabama, he won a national championship in year three. His first year in Alabama, they lost to ULM and went to the Eye Bowl. Okay. Lost to ULM and then played in the Independence Bowl. That was a bit of a struggle for the Nick Tater that first season. It takes time. Hugh Freeze and the Liberty Flames, they'll come to town. UL's going to have to be focused. You heard Nick Fondo from the Daily Advertiser, who joined us earlier, talking about, look, Hugh Freeze is a good coach. He's going to have something up his sleeve, so to speak. What is that going to be? Is there going to be trick plays? Is it going to be a high-powered offense? Because if you look at what they did in the opener, I believe they were shut out by Syracuse. Now, Syracuse is actually a pretty good team. A lot of people feel that Syracuse is one of those teams that is really the only team out of the ACC that could do any damage whatsoever towards Clemson, because they nearly beat Clemson last year. Now, that was before the whole Trevor Lawrence took over and then ended up leading them to a national championship and an absolute whooping of Alabama in the national championship game. So can we read anything into the opener? Syracuse is ranked in the top 25. They were last week, ranked to number 22. They shut out Liberty 24-0. So what can we take away from that? Syracuse quarterback DeVito struggled against Liberty's defense, 17-35 for 176 yards and two interceptions. The Liberty quarterback, meanwhile, had himself a heck of a game, 20-39. That's roughly 50%. Not great on the completion percentage, but he did throw for 234 yards, but also no touchdowns, two interceptions as well. So they like to chuck the ball. Not surprising, it's a Hugh Freeze-led offense. So UL can expect to see that on Saturday, having a game plan against a team that is going to throw the ball a ton. They don't rush the ball barely at all. As a team, they had negative 2 yards rushing. Negative 2. Their leading running back only had 11 carries for 29 yards. Their quarterback had 10 carries for minus 39 yards. So, yeah, the threat of run is not going to be high when the Flames come to town Saturday to Cajun Field, okay? It's just not going to happen. So, Ron Roberts, though, will like that because Liberty is going to be one-dimensional on offense, which is going to make things easier on defense. Ron Roberts' scheme, he's going to be able to blitz more because of that. They can game plan. They'll get the extra work for the nickelback and the dime package this week as they prepare for Liberty and their passing attack. Because of that, they're going to be able to do more things. Be a little bit more creative because you don't really have to worry about the threat of the run game. Defensively, they did a nice job against Syracuse passing attack. Syracuse, though, was able to gouge them on the ground. Didn't have a rusher over 100 yards, but they did rack up nearly 200 yards on the ground. Syracuse went with a balanced attack. So what does that tell you? Tells me everything I need to know right there, doesn't it? That tells me that three-headed monster that kind of stalled a little bit in the second half against Mississippi State, they're going to have themselves a monstrous game. Defensively, Ron Roberts and his staff can game plan, can be aggressive, can attack because Liberty's going to be one-dimensional. They only pass the ball. That's the only thing that they're efficiently good at. So they'll game plan for that, trying to cause havoc, trying to force turnovers. The flip side of that is, offensively, Coach Rob Sale, the offensive coordinator, and Billy Napier, who calls the plays, the head coach, they're going to attack with the run game. You give up nearly 200 yards rushing to Syracuse. What do you think is going to happen when that three-headed monster takes to the field on Saturday? Elijah Mitchell, Raymond Calais, and Trey Regis. With that offensive line, expect the Cajuns to win the battle at the line of scrimmage. Now, Liberty does have a playmaker at wide receiver. Their leading receiver from the opener against Syracuse is Antonio Gandy-Golden. That's a hyphenated last name, by the way. Gandy-Golden. It's a good name. He had 6 catches for 119 yards against Syracuse. That's a top 25 opponent. They're going to have to take him out of the game. He's a big, rangy wide receiver, 6'4", 220 pounds. He's a native of Georgia. And look, he's coming off a very good season where he didn't have Hugh Freeze as his head coach. Had over 1,000 yards receiving and 71 catches and 10 touchdowns. He is their best offensive playmaker. So guys like Michael Jacquet and others, Deuce Wallace, the back end of that defense, are going to have to do their due diligence and make sure to neutralize the impact that Gandy-Golden is going to make on this game. Once again, he's coming off playing a top 25 opponent on the road and still got his 6 catches for 119 yards. Held out of the end zone, obviously, because they were shut out. But this is a guy who won his one-on-one battles against Syracuse. So that means UL is going to have to do their due diligence, going to have to probably get some help there. Now, they know they can plan to attack the passing attack from the Flames. But number one threat is obviously Antonio Gandy-Golden. He is a playmaker at the wide receiver's position. But the biggest thing, though, for UL is that they just have to flush what happened on Saturday. Look, there's a lot of positives. We've talked about it on today's show. We had callers call in. Both Doug and Chad called earlier today, talking about that exact same thing. A lot of positives, but they still fell short. So they can't dwell on the fact that, hey, if they hadn't committed 5 turnovers, what if it was only 2 turnovers? Maybe then they could have been able to do what they needed to do and pull out the win, their first against an SEC opponent. They can't dwell on that. They can't dwell on the what-ifs because they can't go back in time and change the outcome of last week's game. They have to live with the fact that they lost the game, but they can take away positives from it and make sure the negatives that occurred in that game, the multiple turnovers, sometimes the lack of execution, especially there with that 4th down play, take those negatives, turn them into positives this week against the visiting Liberty Flames. And heck, you can do it against a guy who used to coach in the SEC. And look, winning your first game, not a bad consolation prize for them. Because No one expected the Cajuns to beat Mississippi State. Everyone expects them to beat Liberty. So to bounce back at home, hopefully in front of a large crowd, talking to you Cajuns fans, they're at Cajun Field in their home opener and be able to get a win and, more importantly, be able to get a convincing victory at home, execute in all three phases of the game, as Billy Napier likes to talk about, offense, defense, and special teams, and be able to do that against a veteran coach and be able to take out a team that does have a playmaker on the offensive side of the ball there at wide receiver. And to get a win, to get a double-digit victory, win by 10, 14, 17 points, that would be a great shot in the arm. Because then, after 2 weeks, the Raging Cajuns can go, you know what? We hung tough with a team out of the SEC West. We committed our own mental mistakes that helped cost us that game. But we hung tough with a team from the SEC West who curb-stomped us the year before by more than 40 points. Then we bounced back, flushed that game, came back, routed an opponent at home in our home opener. Now we're getting the ball rolling for the season. We can hang tough with a team out of the SEC West, and we're taking care of the teams that we need to defeat at home, or regardless, teams on our schedule that we need to take care of. That's what you're going to be looking for. That's what I'm going to be looking for from the Raging Cajuns come Saturday when they host the Liberty Flames. We'll try our best to get Damon Sordelet on the program at some time this week to help us give even more insight on what the Liberty Flames bring to Saturday's contest. But right now, we got to take our final timeout of the day. You're listening to RP3 and Company, Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Now, don't forget to go to 1037thegame.com right now and go vote on our latest poll question. Did Saturday's season opener versus Mississippi State inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome is more about the UL Raging Cajuns or more about the Mississippi State Bulldogs? So make sure to go vote on that. Hey, also, while you're there voting on our poll question, guys, take a moment and sign up in our Clubhouse Rewards Club. Trust me. You're going to thank me for this. You sign up in the Clubhouse Rewards Club, and you can take part in so many different contests that we have going on, so many giveaways that we have going on. And the only thing that you have to do is join the Clubhouse Rewards Club, and you can enter to win a $50 voucher to Ruffino's on the River. Yeah, $50 voucher to Ruffino's on the River. It's one of the best restaurants in Acadiana. Friend of Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. You can also have a chance to win a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. Get all types of deals, all types of promotions. You can enter to win a Mr. Lester's and Mabel's Kitchen gift certificates. You want to take out your bride, your wife, go get yourself a nice, juicy steak dinner. Mr. Lester's is going to take care of you. You can enter to win a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester's Steakhouse down there in Cypress Bayou. If you want to go a little bit more casual, you just want to go down there, have a good time, spend a little money, you want to have something nice to eat, you can also enter to win a $25 gift certificate to Mabel's Kitchen, which is also inside Cypress Bayou. Look, you can enjoy all of these great things, and you can take a moment to win these vouchers, these gift certificates, these gift cards. The only thing you have to do, go become a member of the Clubhouse Rewards Club at 1037thegame.com. It's just that simple, guys. That's all you got to do. So make sure to do it right now. What are you waiting for? Programming reminder, Astros baseball on today. They'll wrap up that little two-game set against the Milwaukee Brewers. Astros at the Brew Crew. Pre-game will be 6:35. Astro launch, 6:35. First pitch, 7:10. We are Acadiana's home for Houston Astros baseball, so you can check out the Stros tonight, see if they can get the sweep from the Brewers after taking game one yesterday. Following the end of Astros baseball, right afterwards, Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo and company will be recapping LSU's victory over Georgia Southern and giving you a preview on what's to come Saturday in Austin. I think there's a pretty big ball game going on, LSU at UT. So you can make sure to check that out tonight. Also, reminder, Coach O press conference can be listened to live today. We'll break into gym. We'll actually break into the Jim Rome show starting at 12:10 for Coach O's press conference. That'll be from 12:10 to 1 o'clock. So if you want to hear what Coach O has to say about what his team was able to accomplish on Saturday and looking ahead to Texas, we got you covered right here at 103.7 The Game. I want to thank our guest today, Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com, dropping by, giving us the latest updates on all things recruiting. I also want to thank Nick Fondo for checking in with us, giving his thoughts on the UL Raging Cajuns, recapping week one, looking ahead to week two. Hey, also, make sure, jot this down, make sure you're going to want to listen to Five Guys Stories and Lies this week, guys. Okay? This Wednesday night, a full 2 hours of the Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 to 8. They got, I'm not making this up, they got the man, the myth, the legend, who portrayed the fabulous Cajun Chicken, the most well-regarded, beloved mascot in UL athletics history. He's going to be joining the Five Guys this Wednesday night from 6 to 8. So make sure to tune in for that. You guys be safe out there today. Love one another. Try not to get too angry. Just breathe, relax, enjoy yourself, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. This is 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station.